Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you, one and all, for being with us. We've been gone for a few weeks, which you may have noticed. The studio is on a college campus, which was closed for the holidays. And I got a break for a couple of weeks, which was delightful. My guests tonight are Normandy Ellis and Nikki Scully, and they are going to talk about some amazing information about magic and initiatory practices of ancient Egypt. And it's not often I have a guest who emails me and says, yeah, I'll be back from Egypt in time for that. So I'm looking forward to talking to them. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. Albert Einstein said, if you want your kids to be smart, read them fairy tales. And if you want them to be smarter, read them more fairy tales, which is very much in line with what our guest a few weeks ago, Dr. Mel Madrona, said about how the brain stores information. It stores the information in stories. So the stories that we tell ourselves, the stories that we tell our children, the things we watch on TV, what we read, all of that is creating literally the way that our brain is going to hold things and understand things. And part of the reason I'm thinking about that lately is I had the delightful opportunity to hang out with my daughter, who's in college, and I don't see her very much. And we decided that we were going to watch all six of the original Star Wars movies before seeing number 7. And we've done this. This is the third time that we've done that together, and it's absolutely great fun. And the Star Wars movies are about the hero's journey. They're about the struggle of light and dark. And Lucas actually spent time with Joseph Campbell learning about all those underlying principles of the warrior path and the hero's journey. And that whole story is the challenges of being initiated into that path. And what happens if you don't make it? Because that's seduction by the dark side. So I've always enjoyed doing that with my kid. But when she was really little, when she was, I guess, 4, our evening ritual was to have dinner and then watch Star Wars Next Generation together. It was the last thing before bedtime. And that was basically fairy tales. It was a world that had rules, and the people on the ship had to follow those rules, and they were faced with challenges that made them have to figure out how they were going to meet the challenge and still not violate those principles. And it's the same stuff as fairy tales. It was wonderful. I got to talk to her about important principles before she went to bed, and she was right there with it. And the same thing with the Star Wars movies. I remember at the end of episode 3, where we see Anakin Skywalker be seduced by the dark side and turn into Darth Vader. At the end of the movie, I turned to her and said, how did they get him? What did they do? And in 2 sentences, she probably was 8, 9, 10 years old. She was a little kid. In 2 sentences, she explained to me the process of the dark side turning someone from a good person into one of their minions. She just got it. I said, okay, all of everything that they did with these 6 movies was worth it because this child right at this moment understands how that happens. And that's very important stuff. And I don't think we realize, and especially now in the middle of Disney's turning it into yet another Disney thing with a million spinoffs and toys and sort of other stuff, that the underlying stories involved in these things make a big difference in how we look at the world and how we understand spirituality, whether they believe it or not. So I encourage you to see all of the movies. They were great fun, and there's a whole lot of information there. So that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And now let's meet our guests, Norman D. Ellis and Nikki Scully. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
And yeah, and it's been a comedy of errors, which we could blame on Mercury being retrograde, but everything I tried to do to put things together in a seamless way like we usually do didn't work this week. So I apologize. But we got you here. And what I always ask my guests is, what was your journey, your walkabout, your hero's journey that got you to the place of doing this amazing stuff that you're doing? Who wants to go first?
Normally,
nobody's
like
jumping in.
Nikki, tell me about your Grateful Dead stories.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so we're gonna start there.
Yeah.
Okay, I first went to Egypt with the Grateful Dead in 1978. That was my homecoming, so to speak. Although I, of course, didn't recognize it at the time.
Right.
And what a wild party it was. And I had no idea that these 35 or however many years later, I would still be going to Egypt and have taken more than 60 groups. And so I'd have to say that that magic that was amplified as Grateful Dead concerts tend to do, caused me to have a number of epiphanies. And it was actually, it also caused me to go back to Egypt. I was back 3 weeks later and set up an import business for a year. And it was during that time of falling in love with Egypt and realizing, not understanding where it was coming from, that I made the commitment to become a healer, which led to my leaving the Grateful Dead scene. I was at that time married to the first manager of the Grateful Dead. That's what I was doing there. And in leaving at the time I did, which is in the beginning of 1981, I was looking for tools to heal the what had become systemic problems in our family. And so that's what motivated me to look for teachers and become a healer. And then the rest is pretty much written in some of my books, the stories, but not in the book that she and I are talking about. But I want to say something about your introduction, if I could just take a moment.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
And it'll be a good lead-in for Normandy, because Egyptian mythology is very much like the fairy tales that you're talking of. They teach the principles that we need to know in order to be directly connected to source and know that our information that we're getting is the truth, is in cosmic law, is in alliance with Maat, which is the natural laws and balance in the universe. And Normandy, one of her books is called Feast of Light. And I would say, of all the books on mythology of Egypt, there is none that gives more life to the characters, which is the family of the Egyptian pantheon, than Feast of Light. And so I want to hand it to Normandy because she is the mythologist that understands why Egypt is such a great source for the hero's journey.
Great. So tell us.
Okay. Well, let's see. First of all, I want to jump in on what Nikki said, why Egypt is such a source for the hero's journey. The pharaoh was the embodiment of the child of Isis, who was called Horus in the Greek tradition, but the Egyptians called him Heru, or hero, from which we get the word hero. Mm-hmm. And so his story of from his birth, from his family trying to do him in, Set, his uncle, his crippled childhood. All of us have a sort of crippled childhood at some point that we have to get through, until his mother teaches him practicalities and his father teaches him in the dream time from the underworld. And so it really is a as above, so below type of story where we learn the spiritual lessons and the karmic lessons and really the physical lessons that we have to go through. Now, how I got to Egypt was I was very interested at one time in studying metaphysics and was doing the work of Dion Fortune when I ran into a friend who was trained as a Rosicrucian to assist souls in transition when he was in Vietnam. And he's the person who walked me across the street to a bookstore, got Budge's Book of the Dead off the shelf and handed it to me and said, here, buy this. So I did, you know, under some protest. And then that night he said that he had to leave town and he couldn't leave his Rosicrucian texts with the people he was living with. So he left them with me. And then I moved to Colorado and I took his books with me, figuring, well, I'll catch up with him later. A year later, I still had his books and I went home and opened the newspaper and found that my friend Robert had been murdered and his body was found at the bottom of a lake. Oh, and so suddenly this book of the dead acquired this incredible resonance for me. I was in graduate school. I started doing a class in translation. I was studying, you know, creative writing, English literature. And after translating Spanish fairly poorly, the teacher said, what other language do you have? And I said, nothing, but I'm interested in these hieroglyphs. And so he convinced me to get various other translations, a good grammar dictionary, and just start playing with Budge's Book of the Dead. And that was a 10-year experience. I translated that book from beginning to end three times. You know, each time I learned something new and something different and something richer. And sometimes I would just fall asleep on my desk over top of this copybooks and the manuscripts and, you know, dream and wake up and I would have, you know, a piece of it right there, you know, from the unconscious, as if Osiris had just come up from the underworld and given me something. It was, you can imagine, it was quite obsessive for 10 years to be translating this text, the same text. I had a baby, I had a husband who really thought that I had lost my mind and wanted me to throw it away because he said it was ruining our marriage. So after some many tears and a lot of angst, I put the manuscript in the back of my car and I was going to drive it to the dumpster one night. And lo and behold, while I'm driving, I look in the rearview mirror and I see my friend Robert sitting in the back seat. And he was just bald as an Egyptian priest wearing a white robe. And I thought, yeah, right. I'm just gone crazy. I'm over the deep end. So I kept driving. And he reached out and he put his hand on my shoulder. And it was as if I'd stuck my finger in an electric socket. You know, I just shivers all over. And I, you know, I didn't even recognize my own voice screaming in the car. And when we finally stopped, he was still there. And I said, Robert, don't you ever do that again. You scared the hell out of me. And then he was gone, you know, and I recognized that I needed to save this manuscript. And so I put it in the trunk of my car in the wheel well, because I knew my husband would never look there. And I hid this manuscript for about 3 months. I would work on it, you know, at lunch. I would pull it out and work on it. And finally, a friend who had been in that class with me the first time and had heard the first translations said to me, you wouldn't happen to have a manuscript of that that you were working on? And I said, yes, I do. And so I published it. That was Awakening Osiris. And it was from that, from those royalties, that I was first able to go to Egypt. I had never been to Egypt, but I was living with it in my inside for 10 years, mm-hmm. you know. So that's how it came to me.
And it's also from that book that someone gifted me that I was so moved. In fact, that book still moves me more than any book. If I were to be left marooned on an island somewhere and could only have one book, it would be Awakening Osiris. And I was so moved by it that I made a cold call and got a very warm reception. And we started teaching probably a couple of years later. Started teaching together and started our mystery school, which we've done for about 18 years. And we've led 6 or 7 trips to Egypt together. And the magic just keeps on growing. And the book, The Union of Isis and Thoth, that brought us to you, Magic and Initiatory Practices of Ancient Egypt, was a result of a hieros gamos, a sacred marriage that happened during a transmission ceremony that we did in Kentucky when she was helping, Normandy was helping me get my manuscript for alchemical healing ready for inner traditions. And at that time, in this transmission, it became obvious that something else was happening, that there was something being conceived that we didn't understand, didn't know what it was. And it took 2 decades before we were able to birth it. Mm-hmm. And this book is the result of that sacred marriage. How's that?
Quite the journey.
I have to add one little thing in here, because this sacred marriage that we talk about, you know, when most people hear it, they always think of it's like the union of the masculine and the feminine, and it's like a falling in love. And it is a falling in love. And Nikki and I fell in love with each other because we were just sister priestesses. But this last 2 years, I mean, you know, almost 20 years went by, and we sort of were getting older. And the last part of this, writing the book, I just have to say, it had us in bed with each other, because she had such a hard time with her back and her neck, and I had to have my shoulder replaced. And so we're sitting there with our laptops next to each other in this.
Because we couldn't sit at a desk. We couldn't sit at a computer. We had to do the computing on our backs.
It was so funny, you know, and there really is a picture of us lying in bed with these computers on our laps. And I think every time she says hieros gamos, I think, yeah, that's what it looked like.
It's always fascinating how these things play out and all the things that we go through, some of which are just plain weird and silly.
Yes.
I mean, anybody who has gone through that kind of stuff has at least some part of it that's like, and then, and everybody in the room laughs because it's just so ridiculous. I know I have some great stories like that, but. um,
So one of the things that you just kind of offhandedly mentioned was creating a mystery school. And we've actually had a couple of guests who have their own version of what they call a mystery school, and each one is slightly different. But why don't you describe what a mystery school is and what you are doing with people?
Well, our mystery school is it's thought-based. So I guess we'd have to say who Thoth is, because the book is The Union of Isis and Thoth. And Thoth is considered the father of hermetics, the teacher of teachers, the wise uncle in the Egyptian tradition, probably the oldest of all the gods, who is the one that all the other Neteru or gods defer to. And when they run into problems that they can't figure out, because he's the god of wisdom, language, and communications, they go to him. And so he sort of was the architect of the mystery school, and yet the instructions came from one of his most intimate partners, the goddess Sechet, with whom, she's the goddess of writing and the keeper of the libraries and the Akashic record. And she's also the one who draws the plumb lines for building the temples and places them correctly and instructs the priests where to put things and how to build them. And so the school started with building the temple. And it was an etheric moon temple dedicated to Thoth on my land. And we had a space that was, it was a hayloft in my barn that I converted to a place for retreats and workshops and to do my healing work. And so that's the only physical part of the temple. But the magic that went into the consecration of this temple was very much given direct from source. And we're generally not told until just before we teach what the subject is, because if we knew, we'd probably play with it or make assumptions, and it wouldn't be pure and fresh and alive, which is one of the keynotes of true magic, is that
yes,
that life
channeling it in the moment, right
in
here.
The moment. And yeah. So the first part of the book is the instructions and the maps, so that people can consecrate their own temple in the way that it was done in ancient Egypt, using the same maps that we were given. And then, of course, as the years went by, the temple grew, because each year more of the Neteru wanted to be represented. They wanted their chapels. They wanted and so there was always the learning of the new gods and what they wanted us to know about them, and writing the invocations for them.
Normally, I hate to interrupt you, and we are going to have to go to a break.
Okay.
And we will come back and pick this thread up. My guests tonight are Nikki Scully and Normandy Ellis, talking to us about their book, The Union of Isis and Thoth, Magic and Initiatory Practices of Ancient Egypt, and their amazing story of all the things that they've done here and in Egypt. And this is very exciting to hear about. And I'm so glad that you're here, and we will continue shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. This is David Franklin Farkas on the Farkas Files. And we will be back in just a minute. Don't go nowhere.
Many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha-ha, I win. Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gundersen keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What did he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Nikki Scully and Normandy Ellis, talking about magic initiations and practices of ancient Egypt and their amazing experiences in Egypt and in building a sacred temple here, which I was having fun hearing about and seeing it in my mind's eye.
So, go ahead.
Well, the one thing that we didn't get to do because I didn't want to interrupt you is give your web address.
Oh, thank you. Mine is shamanicjourneys.com or nikkiscully.com, and Normandy's is normandyellis.com.
And Normandy is spelled N-O-R-M-A-N-D-I. So,
and
so
Nikki is spelled N-I-C-K-I. And just Scully with people, a C.
Just to keep people on their toes. Right. And all of that will be on all the posts that I put out anyway, so people will be able to find you. So keep going with the amazing story of the temple.
Well, I want to hand it to Normandy because I've taken up a lot of airspace, and at a certain point we had to, when we realized it was time to write the book, and there was no question when it became time, we had to decide what of all the mystery schools would be the most important to pass on. And that was a pretty difficult decision, except that as we looked at our history, there was a sequence, and it ultimately led us to the building of the Inner Heart Temple, or the Adidam. Normandy, you want to take over?
Sure. Most of the temples in Egypt, as Nikki had mentioned, our etheric temple was built on the etheric plane, but it duplicates the physical temple structures of ancient Egypt, which are like hallways within hallways within hallways, mm-hmm. to the point that, you know, you're moving through ever narrowing passages into the Holy of Holies and into the Adidam, where the Naos is, and the shrine of the divine being. And that's representative of the human vessel, where we are moving from physical space into more interior spaces, till we reach the heart, where the divine is the seed or the monad of the temple within. So the question was, why would you want to dedicate an etheric temple? And the answer that came to us, and that keeps insisting itself for us, is that there are many people who feel drawn to the Egyptian tradition, to the Egyptian pantheon. It is probably one of the oldest religious systems that we know. And it's also, at this point, an open system as opposed to a closed system like Catholicism. And so it allows the individual to have a relationship with the divine in a way that is not prescribed by some priest or priestess up there. Mm-hmm. No. So you can carry the divine being within you. It's not necessary for a person to go to Egypt to find a relationship with Isis or with Thoth. You know, if you work this energy, you go within yourself and you find this relationship. And that relationship includes learning how to create ceremony, learning how to write hymns and invocations, learning to really do ceremonial magic in order to develop that relationship with the divine. And I think that that is something that Nikki and I are really excited about for this book, because of any of the books that I've done, this one is more a practicum, a metaphysical and ceremonial practicum. And when we hear from people and they talk about the book, that's what they love about it, is that they can find a way in for themselves.
Mm-hmm. And once they have developed themselves through the instructions and the maps that are in the book, so that they have built their Adidam, then the rest of the book is dedicated to what are the practical uses for an internal temple. And so we work with the three higher subtle levels of Egyptian mysticism, which is the Ba, the Ka, and the Ak, the soul, the etheric double or ancestral spiritual lineage, and the Akh or Bennu bird, which is the fully evolved, fully realized human. And so connecting with and traveling astrally with your soul is one of the main practices.
There are moments where you can do some journeying with your soul into past lives. There are places where you can move between worlds, between time frames, go into the past or go into the future, and work with energies at that point. You can develop various types of clairaudient, clairsentient, clairvoyant capacities in order to do some work with the divine. So there's a number of different ways that you can move through these bodies. There's a ritual in which you ascend like the phoenix that's based on the pyramid text of Unas from the 5th dynasty of ancient Egypt, 2400 BC. And so we do visualizations that are not just imaginary, but are written in the text themselves, you know. And so we draw on those sources and weave it together that way.
It's so profound that you can still get information from the texts from almost 5,000 years ago are still available, and that you can work through the same methods and ceremonies that they used 5,000 years ago. That's extraordinary.
Yeah. And reach the same conclusions, which is that direct connection with source that is what gave each pharaoh the opportunity for enlightened rulership. Unfortunately, there were the peaks and valleys, there were the enlightened rulerships, and then there were the times of corruption and greed that brought it down. Over 5,000 years, it was quite a ride.
Mm-hmm.
But those temples were built with such consciousness and such intention that if you have an open heart and an open mind and are not just looking for a photo op, and you walk into those temples, something is going to happen that is going to be transformative. And if you have a good map, it's very likely to be life-changing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's part of the experience of holy places, especially extremely old ones anywhere in the world, is they really weren't a place to go in and have a scripted conversation with God. They were a place to sit and have the place change you.
Exactly.
So that you had the experience because you were changed by the experience of being there. There are some people that have experienced that in Western religions, but in the older religions anywhere and in indigenous cultures. And, you know, you're describing the Egyptian stuff, and it's a shamanic system like many, many others all over the world.
And that's something that people don't realize generally, that it is a shamanic system.
Yeah, and And, you know, Tibetan Buddhism is a shamanic practice. It's all over the place. And it's always extraordinary to look at how the techniques and the methods, even though the cosmology is different and the stories are different and the names are different, but the way you get there and where you get to are exactly the same. And the understandings are the same. And the understandings are the same.
And that the beauty of these truths is that after 5,000 years, they are still relevant.
Right.
And they offer us opportunities to literally raise our intelligence so that we can connect with Source in a way that we can find solutions to the problems that we're facing on this planet. I mean, there's you probably know this, but Star Wars, the Jedi, is based in the Jed, the Jed pillar of ancient Egypt. Are you familiar with that?
I didn't know that part. I knew that the martial arts they used were based on Shaolin monks, but I didn't know that part of it.
Well, the Jed is the backbone of Osiris. And so when he was murdered, and then by her love and the magic she was taught by her teacher Thoth, Isis was able to raise him, literally raise him in order to conceive their son from the dead. Do you want to speak more to that, Normandy?
But I don't know how long we've got. it's really a process of sacred remembering, because he was torn asunder into very many parts and reassembled. And I always think, you know, it's kind of a joke, but I really mean it, where she was walking through the desert going, "Osiris, honey, pull yourself together." But wherever she found a piece of him, she created a temple. And I think that what's really important about that idea is that there's the divine spark within everything, you know, and every temple in Egypt is built from a seed stone. It's built on top of another temple, and whatever was in that older temple is pulled out and inserted into the new temple, so that all the consciousness that came from the first temple is in each subsequent temple. And I think that that's kind of the way that Akashic records, our bodies hold the Akashic records. The temple of our body, the DNA of our body, holds the records of our ancestors. And all, there are certain parts that they know that are encoded in us that, you know, it's like I was quite bemused to find out that my claustrophobia was because I had an ancestor who was a medium that was locked away and said to be insane, you know, and that fear of being locked into a room, you know, the fear of speaking about things metaphysical was actually in my DNA, you know? Right. And so
have you seen the medical science that they're doing now, where they're tracing the effects of stress across generations?
Yes.
In the DNA? So they're proving that all of that is coded in the DNA. They're just starting to get a handle on it. Right. They can go back two generations with stresses that are known in the family lineage. They did it with Holocaust survivors, among others.
Right.
But that's so exciting that they're starting to confirm all this stuff, which in so many traditions and for so many of us is so obvious.
That's right. And it was in this, you know, 10,000-year-old, started that far back, religion.
Right.
And so that pulling that memory forward and pulling the divine forward and pulling the sacred story and the hero's story, all of that.
Also that healing process of taking the shattered pieces, the pieces of you that were traumatized, and bringing them back is soul retrieval.
Remembering yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
And speaking of which, we can't forget to tell your audience that Normandy not only just got back from Egypt, but she's going again in April, and there are still a few, just a few places left in her tour. We do these very intimate, and they're fairly high-end tours on a private yacht, Dahabeya, which is the kind of ancient Egyptian yacht that the royalty used to sail the Nile on. And wow. It was built to our specifications, basically, and so that we can take a small number of people and not be limited like the huge boats that have to follow a certain order, and we can go wherever we want. We can park on an island and wake up in the morning with water buffalo swimming next to us. And, you know, it's really like going back 5,000 years in time. And, you know, we can go and wander and visit the villages. It's actually very safe. Normani can attest to that. She just got back.
Right. I think when people were, the good news is that the temples were really open for our endeavors all the time. You know, we bought some private visits to like the Temple of Isis at dawn and inside the Great Pyramid and between the paws of the Sphinx. But because many people are so xenophobic these days, there were not very many people in the temples themselves. So when we wanted to go somewhere and look at something, it was open for us and accessible for us. We didn't have to dodge a lot of other groups. So right now is actually a very safe and a very beautiful time to go to Egypt. Mm-hmm. And it's a good ambassadorship because the people, you know, the people need us. One of the things that truly moved me was walking through the streets and seeing the vendors watching us walk through the street, and we would buy a few little things here and there, a lot of mercy shopping, you know. And our guide said, "I just want you to know that this is the best thing you can do. You're bringing people hope."
Well, that's sounds like an extraordinary way to see all those sacred sites and have the flexibility to be guided where you're supposed to go. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And, you know, things are getting pretty crazy out there. We don't know how long we'll be able to do it, but we can certainly speak for right now. And so if you've been called, this might be your time. Certainly get a hold of us at shamanicjourneys.com and we'll get you all the information.
Fantastic. So what else are you guys offering at the moment? You obviously have the new books and you have that trip coming up.
Well, let's see. Normandy's got a year-long goddess.
What? Intensive. It's a goddess intensive. Yeah.
From Feast of Light.
Yeah, it's based on Feast of Light. And I'll introduce you to a new goddess each month, and you can work with her individually, and then we'll have some community events that you can work with, and I'll have a teleconference once a month about it. So I'm excited about that. That's through the Mother House of the Goddess. And Nikki and I are going to be doing another mystery school this year. Nikki, you want to tell them about that?
I think it's in August. I forgot to look up the dates. But it's sometime this summer. I believe it's in August, and it's here in Eugene, Oregon. And it'll be for a week. And
that's the 17th, August 17th through the 22nd.
And then the other thing that I'm doing is I do a free planetary healing call to action. I try and do it every month or two, and it's based in the book that I wrote with my husband, Planetary Healing, Spirit Medicine for Global Transformation. And we have that coming up. Oh, my gosh. Do you know the date, Mark? I think it's sometime next week. Again, you'd have to find it on my website. But that's a free seva that I do for the world, because it's just so important right now that these tools get out there.
Yeah.
And then go ahead.
Oh, well, one thing I wanted to mention, which I didn't want to forget, is that I teach in the metaphysical school at Camp Chesterfield, and there are weekend workshops and week-long seminaries if you're in the Midwest. So that's outside Indianapolis, and you can go to campchesterfield.net and get information about all of the classes that we offer, and things like metaphysical journaling, sacred calendar. I'm teaching the Egyptian Book of the Dead. And I'll also be at the Pyramid Conference as soon as I get back from Egypt in May the 13th, 14th, and 15th. And that'll be in Chicago. And those are pyramids all over the world.
And if you have any listeners from Salem, Oregon, I'm going to be at the Book Bin tomorrow night, and I'll be leading an initiation from the Union of Isis and Thoth at that presentation. And we're doing a virtual book launch. That's really exciting. We've never tried anything like this before, but we're going to make ourselves available on the 28th of this month. I hope I've got that right. For 2 hours in the evening. I think we're starting at 4:30 Pacific time. And for those 2 hours, we're just going to be online on a conference call where we're going to chat with people and answer questions and talk about whatever they want to know about the work of the book and what we're doing and how they can get the most out of the maps that we've provided for them. And
terrific.
And then the other thing that I do is alchemical healing, which and Anubis oracle readings. And I do those on Skype or by telephone or at my home in Eugene. And I also do a week-long retreat every summer, an intensive where I teach the form and we do a clinic and invite the public to come in and receive healing from the students after they've learned the form.
Fantastic. And, well,
yeah,
as always,
so we're busy.
Yeah, I got that. And as always happens when I have fantastic guests, we're running out of time. So please give everybody the web addresses again.
ShamanicJourneys.com or Nikki. Scully.com and NormandyEllis.com. NormandyEllis.
Fantastic.
And we both have Facebook sites.
Which I've found most of them. So thank you so much for being on the show. Your work is extraordinary. I hope you'll be on the show again and we can talk about specific aspects of your work or some of the other materials that you put together. Because it's just been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
And stay on so we can chat after we go off the air.
Love to.
My guests tonight have been Nikki Scully and Normandy Ellis, who are the authors of The Union of Isis and Thoth, Magic and Initiatory Practices of Ancient Egypt. Thank you so much for being with us. If you happened to wind up being curious about this guy, David, and what in the world does he do? You can go to househealing.com, and cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab is every way I could think of for you to get in touch with me, including I do a 20-minute free assessment of whatever's going on with a person, place, situation, whatever it happens to be, and we can see how my work might be helpful to you. If you want more information about the show, the entire show archive, 5 years of wonderful interviews, is at thefarkasfiles.com. And you can also listen from the archive, you can listen from empowerradio.com, and also from Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and I think there's another one I'm not remembering. Oh, iTunes podcasts. So we're pretty much everywhere. The Farkas Files is on every evening at 9 with a recorded program from the archive. And on Thursdays, we record live for a new show. So you can find us pretty much anywhere. So thank you one and all for being with us. Again, it's so exciting that there are people all over the world tuning in whenever it works for you. And it really warms my heart to know that that's going on and that you're all out there. It's just terrific. So thank you again. And until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.